This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow. At least I'm not coming in. I'm turning on the air to blow a little warm air on my face. Heard from a friend this week. He said that he and I have been, how did he put it? Commiserating together, I think is what he said, because he's got an old clunker and he hasn't fixed the air conditioning on his car yet either. And I thought it was kind of home free, you know, home free. It's mid-September. But here, just at the end of the year, it's decided it's going to get a little warmer. It's really not too bad. It's just a little warmer today. So I'm just going to blow some air on me from the outside. It's not really very cool, but at least the air is blowing. Everything is puttering along. I actually received the beta copies of the next book, Amanda and the Cog-Shifting Imp, a little bit ahead of time, which is great. I handed out some of them today. This evening, I'm going to be signing books and putting them in envelopes and mailing them off tomorrow to people, probably. So that's all going just fine. And I'm making corrections now to Amanda and the Hare-Footed Flame. And it's funny because I'm being a little inconvenienced by having to stand there and make all these corrections. I'm being a little inconvenienced when I'm making these corrections to a book that is about inconvenience. And my first response is, I need to get myself a secretary to do this. Which is kind of the point of the book, that, you know, there are things that are inconvenient in life, but sometimes convenience carries its own price. Actually, the second book is not about that. The second book is about certainty. The first book is about convenience. But anyways, it's fine. I've gotten a lot of good input from beta readers, wide variety of beta readers, wide variety of input. It's always good to see how things are falling out. So I have had several people say very nice things about the book, so it's good. It's good. Everything's good. What else? I'm still thinking about whether or not I'm going to attack this 24-book series, but excuse me. It's been a long week. It just may be time to attack it and go for it. Well, I still have some good years left in me. There's always a little bit of trepidation when you're facing a huge project like that. But, you know, I think it's going to be fine. I kind of thought I knew what I was going to do with the covers. I was going to get poser and kind of do the graphic novel type covers, you know, buxom, curvaceous, muscly people. I don't know if I'm going to do that. When I was collecting all the final books from my beta readers, and many of them are conservative women, I was thinking, oof, that would not go over so well with them. Although it would go over better with my male readership that I expect to start acquiring once I get back into science fiction. I actually had one guy say, you know, when you get through with all those children's books and you start writing science fiction again, let me know. I'll be a beta reader then. Okay. I don't know. I'll see. Maybe I could just do landscapes or something. Sci-fi landscapes. Maybe we could do that. I'll figure it out. It'll be fine. It'll be just fine after it's all said and done. But anyway, so the schedule at this point is I've got to get in all the corrections for Amanda and the Hare-Footed Flame I get that all squared away, once I get that all squared away, then I'll have a couple of months to actually start building the map for the next series of books. Leave myself reminders about all the things that I want to touch on. There is so much I can touch on in this series. And at first I thought it was how does good stand against evil? But I don't think that's the overarching theme. I think the overarching theme is going to be more on the lines of the search for meaning. How do you find meaning when you are an individual working in a hierarchy? How do you find meaning when all the things that you thought were secure are disintegrating around you? I was talking to a young couple I get together with on Saturday about what the book was about, and I was commenting about how cool it is to be writing this book now because there's so many parallels, because the book really, one of the overarching themes is the slow demise of an empire. And we're kind of, you could make that analogy to where we might be at that place in America right now. That what we have enjoyed for the majority of Americans, we might be in the closing moments of that. And I know people have two different views of how, what technology is going to do for us, but I really don't believe it's going to create a utopia. I think what we've seen is that the jobs that existed in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, even the 90s, those jobs were based on the fact that we needed human beings to be able to do certain things, and there were certain tasks that we only entrusted to human beings, and now more and more we are entrusting those tasks to computers and to robots. And so somebody's trying to get cut in, so I'm just going to let him get cut over. What was a skilled set of abilities no longer is. Now there will still be people who will need to take care of those machines and program those machines and all that sorts of things, but the ratio of jobs to that skill set will be dramatically different. Because one person will be able to sit and control 10 different machines where you used to have 10 workers there. So there's some interesting parallels when you start talking about a decaying empire, an empire that is facing the end and the uncertainty of what that end will be. There's some resonance there, and it was interesting when I was talking to this young couple who are at the beginning of their great adventure, certainly have had some wonderful adventures already, but are now still facing decades of earning a living and raising a family. That really struck a chord with them when I started talking about those themes. So it's going to be interesting. Going to be a very different book series than Amanda and the Scleaberry Tree was. I should say than Farforth Fables was. And there's more books in Farforth Fables. I'm just not sure when I'm going to get to those. I think I'm at a good stopping point right now with Amanda and her cohorts and her adventures. But there's certainly more there as well. I told my wife, I'm thinking there's probably 9 in the series now. Anyways. It's interesting. I'm just buzzing. I'm thinking a lot about that right now. Today, sad story today. Sad. I did download the doctor's book about, I downloaded a sample, and I just haven't gotten to the place where I've made time to actually listen to it, read it, on, extending the boundary of death and those things. It looks like a fascinating topic. I've just been busy. But in the meantime, I had come across an article called Rats. I didn't write down the title of the article. It was called Sexting, Shame, and Suicide. Sad story. Sad story. And you can, well, I can look through this and just see the flesh drilled through this. And it's just amazing to me how adept the flesh is at utilizing technology to amplify our destruction. I mean, it's not really that big of a surprise, but when you see it, it's so sad. The article, it was on the online version of Rolling Stones. It's about a young lady whose name was Audrey Pott, P-O-T-T. And she came from a home where there had been a divorce. And she was, you know, kind of a normal girl through middle school. And then she kind of figured out that once she got into high school, well, she apparently developed early and developed, I think they said it was, just a second, I'm stopped at a stoplight so I can actually look at my notes. And this is not the cause, but it's just kind of puts things in perspective. By the time she was 13, she'd sprouted 34 double D breasts. It said, though it won her the attention from boys, it also made her morbidly self-conscious. During her freshman year, she became obsessed with the shape of your stomach and liked to wear too small clothes to be more like her friends. She wanted, her mother said, to be just like the super skinny Asian girls. So, you know, she's wearing tight clothing. She begins to drift away from the set of friends that she had in middle school. She begins to hang around with the partiers, and she discovers that if she gets a couple of drinks in her, that all that awkwardness of a middle schooler, you know, all that fear, all that uncertainty dissolves away. She becomes more outgoing and looser and, you know, the life of the party. Well, so things go on. You know, she is drinking. Her friends know that she's drinking, but they really don't know how much and who with. Then comes a fateful weekend where a friend in her new circle calls her up and says, "Hey, my parents are going to be away. Why don't you come over? We're going to have a party." And so the girls each tell their parents that they're staying with the other ones. So girl A tells her parents, "I'm staying with girl B for the weekend." And girl B tells her parents, "I'm staying with girl A for the weekend." So then they plan this party and, you know, a bunch of kids come over and everybody starts drinking. And Audrey Pott gets just wasted. Just really wasted. And some of her friends from middle school had also, I guess, been invited, and they come to this party and they see her just wasted, you know, and it shocks them because they didn't realize she was getting, and I think they eventually end up leaving. She gets wasted enough that, you know, some of the boys start taking her clothes off, and obviously other things ensue, and then someone decides it would be funny if they got out some Sharpies, and so, you know, they're doodling on her and coloring her face and writing notes on her and all that kind of stuff. And of course, the next morning she wakes up and she just freaks out because she can't remember what happened. She calls her mom. Her mom comes and picks her up, but she won't talk to her mom about what happened. She goes into the bathroom, scrubs and scrubs and scrubs her face, eventually gets her face to where it's presentable. Her mom sees some kind of green markers around her breasts and stuff and ink, and she says, "What was, you know, what's that?" And she didn't want to talk about it. And, you know, this is kind of where the technology kicks in, because, of course, everyone had their phones with their cameras at the party. The guys, you know, took a bunch of pictures. And so she's writing them, trying to do damage control and saying, you know, you've got to delete all those pictures. You know, what happened? You know, why'd you guys do this to me? And, of course, she's really angry at them, and she's embarrassed, and then she starts getting all these notes from people on Facebook, you know, and you know, the guys are thinking it's funny, course, and making comments that they think is funny, which in fact those comments are just, well, it's not the comments that are pounding her down, but when she reads the comments, she just keeps feeling worse and worse and worse. And I don't know what the time frame was between the party and the final act. I could find it in the notes, but I'm driving. But at some point she just calls her mom and asks her mom to come pick her up from school. So her mom picks her up, and she won't talk to her mom, you know. The young lady goes to her room, locks the door. Her mom doesn't think much about it because she did that a lot. She's a teenager. And at some point, her mom goes to check on her. The door's locked. She calls. She doesn't hear anything. Her mom panics. Hurries out, gets the little thing to push in the door and open the door up, and goes in the bathroom, and Audrey has hung herself. So it's very, you know, it's a sad, sad story. It's just a sad story. What's interesting to me about this story, there's a couple of things. One of them is when you see the very predictable patterns that the flesh uses to destroy. The lies that the flesh tells. There's a lot of places it started, and this is certainly not the beginning. But I'll just pick it up from as soon as her body starts to change and she decides she's a freak. Well, what voice is telling her that? Obviously, it's the flesh that's telling her that. And then it tells her that it needs to do this, or maybe you know, if you diet it enough, you can be like those skinny Asian girls. Well, you can diet all you want. If you're not that body type, you aren't going to get there. And we can ascribe a lot of things to society and societal standards and those types of things. But at the bottom of it all, we have within us an accuser and a tormentor that is going to use wherever it can get leverage. And each of us decides how much we're going to let that tormentor torment us. And as is almost always the case with the flesh, as long as you begin to yield to that tormentor and listen to that tormentor, then it just spins it into something worse and worse and worse. And so, you know, you're a freak, your body doesn't look good, you need to accentuate how small your stomach is. So you need to wear shorter skirts. You need to wear tighter clothing so that you don't look like you're fat. And you don't need to, don't eat. And, you know, all these things happen. And then it goes to, well, you know, you'd be a funnier person if you just drink a little. And why don't you hang around with some of the cool kids? Because that'll mean you're cooler. And it just keeps cascading these things. And don't misunderstand what I'm going to say next, but we really can't say it was just the fact that when she was a 13, when she was 13 years old, she was a 34 double D. It's not just that fact, because if we would look across America, I'm sure somewhere we would find some young lady who was a 34 double D who did not end up committing suicide or running with the crowd that liked to drink and carouse and violate the personal space of someone who's drunk and passed out. Which kind of brings us to the next little thing. One of the things that I talk about in the latest book, Amanda and the Cog-Shifting Imp, is I talk about the past. And I talk about controlling the past, because this book is all about control. And one of the things that people try to do with their control is to control things that have already happened, which of course you can't do. I'm getting my mail. You cannot control that which has already happened. And in lieu of trying to control that, what people typically do is they try to redefine it. And they redefine it by figuring out how someone else is to blame for what happened. And they simplify what occurs so that they can point the finger at someone and say, see, that's what the problem was. When in fact, oh, you know what? I have to go feed my kids' dogs. I'm going to drive down there and feed my kids' dogs and just finish this up down there. When in fact, any event has a multitude of cascading causes and effects and decisions that are really, really hard to analyze and determine after the fact, because there's so many things that are happening. There were so many things that was happening in this young lady's life. There were so many things that were happening in the young men's lives and the young girls who were at this party and in the parents. And in, I mean, there's just tons and tons of stuff that piles up to put Audrey at that party on that day to make her drunk, to motivate these young men to do what they did, to motivate her to do what she did, to motivate the school to react to her like they reacted to her. Hi, girls. The girls have come out to see me because they know I'm going to feed them in a moment. So there's so many, many causes that, yes, it's good to try to raise awareness about people's personal space. Yes, it's good to try to make the young men who participated in this understand that that behavior is not acceptable. And there's obviously there is prosecutions moving forward, and there may be a civil case, and all of those things. But all of those things cannot change the past. And the danger in a lot of those things is that everyone will find someone else to blame and then won't realistically look at the decisions that they made that contributed to Audrey Potts' eventual suicide. And I guess what I'd like to do is just caution all of us when we are moving through our days, to make the best decision in those moments. There was one sad commentary in this whole story, and that is when she came back to school the next day, some of her friends, or a friend in particular that was one of her good friends from middle school, confronted her and really gave her a going over about what she needed to do and how she needed to. I think one of her best friends on the school squad accused her of drinking, of forgetting who she was, of becoming a different person. She had been literally the best person you could meet, honest and trustworthy, this young lady said, recalling the episode almost a year later. I was upset that she had changed. It was hard for her to hear that from a close friend. She told her friend, "You need to come back to reality." Okay, well, see, I know this best friend young lady was upset. But that's probably not the best thing to say. I'm not saying she caused Audrey to commit suicide. I'm not saying that. Ultimately, Audrey decided no one could do anything to Audrey to force her to commit suicide. She decided that. Ultimately, it is her responsibility. She decided. There were tons of contributing factors. But what's going to happen is that certain contributing factors are going to decide that the other contributing factors were more important than theirs were. And so, and nothing will change, because when you try to control the past, when you try to assign blame, that typically what we do is we assign blame to other people and then we justify our own behavior. And that's the danger. And I think the only protection we have against this huge confluence of decisions that we just have no idea how they're going to work out in the real world, the only protection that we have is living our best moment right now. And for me, that best moment is defined by love and gentleness and kindness and mercy and goodness and faithfulness and long-suffering. It's defined by all those fruit of the Spirit. And maybe instead of being upset with her friend and, you know, really talking straight to her friend, maybe if there had been love. But when you look across this young lady's life, there wasn't a whole lot. It sounded like, I'm not in the situation, I don't know, but it sounded like there was a loss of communication. There was a loss of intimacy between her and her parents. There was not full, deep relationship. So I guess all of this is just to say, for you parents out there, stay close to your kids. Make time for your kids. Not watching TV per se, but some activity that affords you the opportunity to talk. Stay connected. And in addition to that, let's make sure that our conversation and that our actions are seasoned with love, and that we're gentle and kind, because that's going to afford us a much better chance of actually having a positive impact in someone's life, as opposed to our actions cascading out in someone's life in ways we never intended. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.